Welcome to the Garden Basics with Farmer Fred podcast. If you're just a beginning gardener or you want good gardening information, well, you've come to the right spot. We do listen to the comments you post at the various podcast services, and we respond. Recently at the Apple Podcast site, Sage posted, "Will you please address the mystery seeds being mailed to Americans? This is super scary, and I believe you can help prevent something awful since you have the audience. Thanks in advance." Well, you're welcome, Sage. In advance. Yes, here's one conspiracy in which there are still a lot of question marks. What's the deal with all these unsolicited seed packets being mailed not only to gardeners here in the U.S., but all over the world? The packages originate usually from China and a few other smaller countries such as Kyrgyzstan, or if you have a Kevin Costner California accent, Kyrgyzstan. I'll probably just say Kyrgyzstan. Or maybe it's just a marketing gimmick known as brushing, a way to increase the notoriety and page placement on online selling sites. Or is there something nefarious about those seeds? Well, whatever you do, don't plant those seeds. And don't throw them away either. We'll tell you how you can help solve this mystery. However, we do have more calming things to talk about here today. Information on where to get inexpensive soil tests done. How to tame the heat in peppers that you've grown that are just too hot. So don't plant those seeds. Spend less than a half hour with us here on episode 33 of the Garden Basics with Farmer Fred podcast. Let's go. Recently, many agencies have become aware of a number of reports regarding unsolicited seeds from China being received by homeowners. It's happening throughout the United States. It's happening here in California. It's happening here in Sacramento County. All you have to do is ask Chris Flores. She's the Ag Commissioner for Sacramento County. And Chris, you've been getting calls about this too, and pictures that people have sent in look rather scary. It's all these different types of seeds that have come in from strange places like China and Kyrgyzstan.
That's correct, Fred. We started receiving calls yesterday, Tuesday, the 28th. We have received over 15 calls, and we have collected approximately a dozen seed packets.
I am glad people are giving you the seed packets. I was afraid that they were just taking pictures of them and sending them on their way, because we both know gardeners, and gardeners, if they have seeds, they like to plant seeds. And that's probably the last thing you want to do with a packet of strange seeds.
Correct. Yes. We don't know, you know, where they've come from. We don't know what they contain. You know, California seed law and the federal laws, you know, protect seed and ensure that it is safe and viable and that it doesn't contain noxious weed seeds or diseases and viruses. So we want to make sure that we are collecting these seed packets and that they're not being planted. We do not want them being planted. We also don't even want them being disposed of because we don't know where they'll end up. So we're very happy to collect them.
I would hope, too, that they're also including the original packaging that they came in, because one of the things I understand was that there was some fraud involved as far as certifying these seeds for international shipment.
Correct. They are being labeled as jewelry, toys, other things. So they're not being labeled as seed. So we don't know that they're seed until they're opened.
They are in the pictures you sent me. They've been labeled as rose stud earrings, more earrings, and quite the assortment of different styles of seed as well. The seeds that have been displayed in the news look kind of like citrus seeds, but you've got quite the collection of different seeds. You've got large seeds, you've got small seeds, you've got seeds that look like squash seeds, seeds that look like corn, seeds that look like beans, and it's quite the assortment.
Yes, we had one resident had five different seed packets that she had received. They were just all different seeds.
Do you have any idea, or have you been able to connect the dots as far as the packages that you have received from homeowners who are wondering about it? If they had something in common, were they Amazon customers or Etsy customers or somehow related in that way?
We have been interviewing the residents that we are receiving seed from, and quite a few of them have recently ordered seed through the mail or online. And so we don't know if a mailing list, you know, went out, that these were seed purchasers, but that is one thing that is in common.
This is also something that's always worried me. If you do order seeds through Amazon, sometimes you don't know where they're coming from. I was once looking for a very specific Gaillardia seed called Arizona Apricot, and I found it on Amazon, and I ordered it. And about a month later, they arrived from Qatar, of all places. It confounded me that there were no closer sources for a Gaillardia seed.
Yeah, so you want to make sure when you're ordering seed online that it has proper labeling. And if you ever have a question about whether or not it's a valid or a certified seed, feel free to take a photo and send it our way, and we can always investigate.
The USDA has commented about this, and I won't say they're brushing it off, but they're basically calling it a brushing scam where people receive unsolicited items from a seller who then posts false customer reviews to boost sales. But, you know, that's their best guess at this point.
Yeah, that's one of the theories, but, you know, they don't know. And so we are waiting to hear from the USDA and or the California Department of Food and Ag as far as what our next steps are. So meanwhile, we do want to collect the seeds because we don't know yet what the purpose is and why people are receiving these seeds. And so in order to just ensure that they don't have anything in them that could either harm the environment or our agricultural crops here in the county or in the state, all of the ag departments in every single county is collecting these packets.
Is there any testing going on of these seeds for possible coatings of fungicides?
Not currently, but we're hoping that that will take place. So we are collecting them in order to probably hand them over to the California Department of Food and Ag.
What sort of diseases or problems could happen to agriculture if these seeds got planted and were distributed?
You know, we are always concerned about some strange disease or virus that is in, you know, other countries, something that we don't have here in the United States. And so, you know, we do get an occasional seed that will, when it grows out, it does have a virus on it. And so, you know, we're always concerned about that and want to make sure that we're not spreading something to our established crops.
A lot of people are concerned, though, about they could be some sort of new weed that might be introduced to our area. And what are the problems of new weeds being introduced?
You know, we don't want any new weed infestations or noxious invasive weeds. They always outcompete our native plants. They use more water. They don't hold soil as well. They can poison livestock. There's many detrimental effects of new weeds, and so that's definitely a concern.
Gardeners, though, do have a bad habit of when they have seeds, they want to plant them. And if you plant them and let them grow, you may think, well, what's the harm in that? They're in my yard. How could they possibly spread? Well, if it's some sort of plant that produces berries, it could get spread far and wide by the bird population, for example.
Correct. Yes.
Are you urging those who may have said they have planted the seeds to dig them up?
You know, we are actually waiting on guidance from the state regarding that issue. It would be my assumption that that is something that we would advise, but I would like more information first, you know, before we tell people to dig up their planted seeds.
So to sum up, if you get unsolicited seeds from China or Kyrgyzstan and they're marked jewelry or toys or any other thing, and it's something you didn't order, don't open the package, don't touch the seeds, don't plant the seeds, And don't throw away the seeds either, because that may cause problems at the landfill if they should happen to sprout. What you need to do is save all the packaging, save all the materials, and call your county Ag Extension office wherever you may live. And here in Sacramento County, that number is...
For the Sacramento office, it's 916-875-6603. That's 916-875-6603.
And what will you be asking them to do?
We will actually go out and collect the seed from them, so they don't have to do anything other than arrange an appointment time for us to come out.
And again, I would imagine you'd want them to keep all the packaging involved, and that would include the mailing envelope.
Correct. Yes, please. And we are asking residents that if they can double bag the package, the seeds and the package that they came in, we'd appreciate that in Ziploc bags or some sort of plastic bag.
This isn't just happening in Sacramento County. It's happening in every county in California, probably, and throughout the United States. If you've been watching the news, shipments of unsolicited seed from China and Kyrgyzstan, it's at this point a mystery. The best thing you can do as a gardener, don't plant them, don't touch them. Call your local county ag commissioner, and they will move the seeds away from your house. We've been talking with Sacramento County Ag Commissioner Chris Flores. Chris, good luck on this one.
Thank you, Fred.
Let's bring in our favorite retired college horticultural professor, Debbie Flower. We just heard from Chris Flores, the Sacramento County Ag Commissioner, about the mysterious seeds from China that are now appearing here in California and have appeared so far in something like 23 states.
Isn't that interesting that it's happening?
It is.
All the news and it seems to be happening all over this country.
It's happening just about everywhere. It probably is some sort of marketing scam. But just in case, all the county ag commissioners are saying, please send us your seeds. Don't plant them. Don't throw them away. Don't touch them.
Right.
Because they are concerned about possible viruses that may be in the seeds. Now, I sent you the pictures of the packets that were sent to the county ag commissioner's office, and there certainly are a wide variety of seeds pictured.
Yes, there are.
And I'm wondering what viruses are associated with seeds. Could a seed transmit a virus?
Yes. And in fact, that's one of the primary ways that viruses are transmitted is through seed. Viruses are they're not even a full molecule. They're just a piece of genetic material and a protein. And in order for a virus to become active in a living organism, it has to work its way into the DNA of that organism and let the organism itself, as it makes new cells, make that virus along with it. And so if that plant has that virus, it's in every cell of the plant or every cell that's infected in the plant. And if that infected section makes a seed, then the DNA that is in that seed includes the virus that was in the diseased portion. So absolutely, viruses can be transmitted by seed.
And then looking at the seeds, it appeared that some of them did resemble citrus seeds. So if you're familiar with what's going on in the world of citrus, be it in California or Arizona or Texas or Florida, you have to be concerned about citrus greening disease, Huanglong Bing,
right.
HLB disease. And
right.
Can that virus be transmitted via seed?
Well, the latest information I found was from a journal called Tropical Plant Pathology, and this was from Volume 45, published May 14th, 2020. They were looking at Huanglong Bing, and they say they've now decided it's a bacteria. So it's been a disease that's been difficult for we humans to figure out. So that figuring out even what kind of disease it was part of the problem. So in this article, they say it's a bacteria, mostly vectored, meaning brought from place to place by insects. A psyllid in general, which is a sucking insect, pierces the cells of the plant and leaves some material behind, but eats from that piercing as well. And it says that they found, their goal was to see if there was huanglong being in seeds or other parts of baby citrus plants. And they did find the bacterium in different parts of the seeds and also in citrus seedlings. They found it in the seed coat, in the endosperm, which is the little packet of food that's in every seed, and the embryo, which is the baby plant. So they found it in the baby plant, the food that's in the seed to feed that baby plant, and the coat of the seed that's around that little package of food and baby plant. That's what makes up the seed. So they found it in all parts of the seed, and they found it in the seedlings that were grown from those seeds, except for a few cultivars of citrus, which I have never heard from, the Shamouti, S-H-A-M-O-U-T-I, sweet orange. They did not find it in the embryo of that one. And the Ponkan mandarin, P-O-N-K-A-N, and the Fulha Murcha sweet orange, F-O-L-H-A, second word, M-U-R-C-H-A, sweet orange. Now, I assume these are Asian cultivars, since the names to me sound Asian, and those are not ones I'm familiar with us growing here. But except for those three cultivars of citrus, the HLB was found in the seed and in the baby plants, although the baby plants showed no symptoms of huanglong bing. As we know, in this time of coronavirus, live organisms can have a disease and be carriers of the disease but show no symptoms of that disease. So perhaps these seedlings of huanglong bing grown from infected seed and when examined in laboratory conditions were found to contain huanglong bing but showed no symptoms of it. Perhaps they're carriers that are not showing symptoms. And that means if those plants were grown to be adults out in the field, whether they're adults or not out in the field, if they were visited by the psyllid insect that is the primary carrier or vector of the disease, taking it from one plant to another, could feed on those plants and carry the disease to the next plant. So that it's showing that the bacterium can be, in this one article says that the bacteria can be in the seeds and it can be in the baby plants. It can be in plants that don't show symptoms. And we know that about huanglong bing. It can take a couple years or more to show symptoms in infected plants in the U.S. And so that it can be transmitted by seed and seedling.
So basically the answer is we don't know yet.
Yeah, this one source, right, says that they think. And in science, you have to be able to reproduce what one, in order for it to be good science, it has to be reproducible, whatever that it is, whether it's an experiment or the results of an examination. It has to be reproducible. So we have to wait and see if someone else does similar research and comes up with the same conclusion.
And we should point out that what you were reading from was research that appeared in a peer-reviewed journal, correct?
As far as I can tell, Tropical Plant Pathology is a peer-reviewed journal. It's an international journal devoted to publishing a wide range of research on fundamental and applied aspects of plant diseases. Website right now, there are submission guidelines, ethics, and disclosures. I didn't read those things, so I'd have to read those things to find out for sure that it is peer-reviewed. Peer-reviewed means that they get an article, and if it's got an experiment, they send the article to a statistician to check that the statistics were done correctly. And if it's about citrus, they'll send it to a citrus expert to make sure that the citrus portions are true. And they send it out to all kinds of experts in the fields that this article touches on to make sure that everything, as far as any human can tell, was done correctly.
That brings up another good point to talk about. If you read in the newspaper, and it's very common, new studies suggest that popcorn cures baldness, for example. I wish, but no. That study could have been just some basic research done at a college or some other private institution. And for all we know, it could have been the popcorn industry paying for that research. If you're trying to verify what you're reading is true or not, you have to go to the source material. Is that source material from a valid peer-reviewed journal, or was it a private study or even an institutional study? And look to see, if you dig through it, who funded it. Follow the money, as they used to say.
Yes, absolutely true.
As always, we learn a lot whenever we talk with Debbie Flower, retired college horticultural professor. Debbie, thanks for a few minutes of your time.
Always a pleasure, Fred. Thank you.
We just might call this segment Lessons Learned the Hard Way, or as Grandpa Wicca used to say back on the farm in North Dakota, education costs money. But it pays to spend a bit of money to learn more about your soil. Knowing the exact nutrients and minerals your soil needs before you plant leads to a more bountiful harvest. Thus, you're avoiding the heartbreak of watching your plants spend their time in the ground, struggling to survive, let alone produce flowers and food if there's any ingredients missing in that soil. And we're coming up to that time when many warm climate gardeners will be transitioning from summer vegetables to cool season vegetables. Well, after you rip out those summer squash plants, but before you plant greens like chard, spinach, Chinese cabbage, lettuce, and so much more, get to know your soil a little better. Get a soil test. I've mentioned before that one place that can test your garden soil at a reasonable price is the University of Massachusetts Amherst. It's their Soil and Plant Nutrient Testing Laboratory. You can find a link to that website on today's show notes, or just do an internet search for UMass Amherst soil testing. Well, a few weeks ago, when we were talking to pepper expert Dave DeWitt, he discovered the hard way that salt buildup in his soil was causing his pepper crops to diminish year after year. And he discovered that by using another reasonably priced soil testing service, he was able to turn that around.
Have your soil tested every year. That would be my advice. And the extension services can do that. I used Colorado State University. They have a really good testing lab. It's not very expensive. And they give you a complete report that looks like a scientific paper almost, telling you exactly what your garden needs, and they'll give you advice. And I thought I knew a lot about gardening, but I didn't. I wasn't paying close enough attention to my soil. And so that was the big lesson I learned. You know, you can get the best varieties, you can buy the best bedding plants and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't matter. It's all useless if your soil is building up salts.
Let's talk about exactly what a chili pepper is. There are a lot of hot peppers on the market. You've got your Hungarian wax peppers. Is that necessarily a chili pepper?
It is a chili pepper, but it's not. It's not very hot. It would be not as hot as a jalapeno, say. It'd be more along the heat levels of a a New Mexican or something like that. And you know, New Mexico chilies that we grow here are 800 to 1,000 Scoville heat units, and that's not much. But we don't eat them as a spice; we eat them as a food. And so, when you make a green chili stew, you know it's 30 or 40% green chilies. That's a concentration there, and so it builds up the heat. And so, we can have very hot foods in New Mexico, but that's just because we're eating the chilies as a food, whereas in other cuisines like Tex-Mex, for example, and some of the California cuisines that have chili peppers, they're making a chili pepper gravy. And there's a whole bunch of other, see, that's a dilution factor again, doing it. Here, we don't dilute the chili peppers. We eat them in large quantities. So that makes the heat level higher as we perceive it in our mouth and tongue. So chili peppers, you know, are not vegetables, they're fruits. They're just fruits that are perennials where it doesn't freeze, but sort of like oranges, for example, they're fruits, but you can't grow them all year long everywhere. So they're susceptible to being, you know, frostbite. So chili peppers are similar to that in many ways. And you think, well, chili peppers are just a garden plant. In South America, there are varieties of chili plants that are trees.
Hmm.
Capsicum pubescens, for example, I've seen pictures of the plants, and they're hardwood trees with stems as big around as your wrist, and they grow, you know, 20 feet tall in some places. So, I mean, I don't just think of chili plants as a garden plant, because some chili plants are, as I said, perennials that become trees. There's a wide variety. That's not going to happen in your garden in Northern California or my garden here in Albuquerque, but I have seen people who live in places where there's no frost whatsoever, and they're chili plants, and they keep them every year, and they prune them back, and they turn into small shrubs anyway.
When it comes to growing hot peppers, many people are disappointed when they're growing the really hot peppers that they don't really start maturing until almost the very end of the season, around October or so. And
Some of them have a long growing season, 120 days to 150 days for some of them. The habaneros would be the quickest maturing of any of those ones that are, say, hotter than a jalapeno. And jalapenos suffer these days because the larger the jalapeno, the milder it is. What happened was both New Mexico State University and Texas A&M University came out with non-pungent jalapenos, and those got into the gene pool, and hence jalapenos have been emasculated to a certain extent. That's the joke anyway. Only an Aggie would emasculate a jalapeno. But that's what happened. It got into the gene pool, and so when you see these large jalapenos, they're not going to be very hot. It'll be more like a New Mexican chili than a jalapeno we expect. And that means that a lot of people have turned away and are now replacing jalapenos with serrano chilies. Serrano chilies, nobody's come out with a mild serrano, so they were hotter than jalapenos to begin with, and they still are. So if you're going to be making salsas and or cooking with what used to be jalapenos, now serranos are smaller, so you can't stuff them, whereas you can stuff one of these larger jalapenos. Actually, the jalapenos, the larger ones, are better for stuffing because they're not so hot, you know, for people who like chiles rellenos. And so the larger ones are good for something, but originally they came out with non-pungent jalapenos for the nacho market in ballparks and things like that, where people were getting burned out by the jalapenos and saying, can you make something a little bit milder so I can, so my nachos won't just kill me? And that's how it all happened. But once you do that, then you just don't know, because people are growing. The pollen can be transmitted by insects over a distance. Really, the chili peppers are not pollinated by wind. They're pollinated. They're self-pollinating mostly, but insects can carry the pollen from one plant to another. So if there's a field of non-pungent jalapenos, and if it's within a mile of other chili plants, then that pollen's going to be everywhere. The rule of thumb is as far as a honeybee can fly, which is a couple of miles.
How is it that some people run screaming to the kitchen sink after a small bite of a moderately warm chili pepper, and yet you probably have friends who can munch happily on an entire bowl of habaneros with no apparent ill effect? Well, as DeWitt points out, it depends on how many capsaicin receptors that you were born with. And he also points out a really nifty trick for reducing the heat of chili peppers that you're using in recipes.
For example, the woman who's on YouTube from India who's squeezing pepper juice into her eyes from super hot peppers, she was obviously born without any capsaicin receptors. That's the only way she was able to stand it. And so there are people like that, and you probably know some people who can gobble down super hot peppers without blinking an eye. They just were born with very, very few capsaicin receptors. Most of us were born with a normal amount, so we can take it to a certain heat level. But, for example, everybody thinks because I'm a pepper expert that I can take super hot peppers. Well, I can't. The habanero is about the hottest pepper I can take, and I still don't eat those raw. I mean, I mix them with, or cook with them, or mix them with a fresh salsa or something. But I'm not going to go eat habaneros raw. They're just too hot for me. But as I said, the dilution factor works in there, and so they are usable in certain kinds of foods. If you were making a soup, for example, and you were going to make a gallon of soup, then you might put two habaneros in the soup, but by the time all the other ingredients were in it, you would have the heat level diluted down to a level that was that you could take and it would be tasty. So that's the big mistake most people make, is not diluting them enough. You can cook with the habaneros and the super hots. You just have to be very careful with it.
That's pepper expert Dave DeWitt, author of the complete chili pepper book, A Gardener's Guide to Choosing, Growing, Preserving, and Cooking. You can find a link to that and more of Dave DeWitt's pepper books in today's show notes. Garden Basics comes out every Tuesday and Friday, and it's available just about anywhere podcasts are handed out, and that includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Overcast, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and hey Alexa, play the Garden Basics with Farmer Fred podcast, would you please? Thank you for listening, subscribing, and leaving comments. We appreciate it.